Your dreams are bigger, bolder, and more badass than the life you're living now, but something just keeps getting in the way. Join certified coach and former therapist Diane Wingert for the Driven Woman podcast. She'll show you how to get rid of whatever is holding you back so you can stop spinning your wheels and up-level your life. Get ready to hop in and buckle up. This is the Driven Woman podcast, and we're heading for the fast lane.
Well, hey there, Driven Woman, and welcome back. Let me ask you a question. Do you think it would make a difference in your earning potential, your confidence, the profits in your business, if you were better at negotiating? Let's just start with the basics. Do you even recognize when you could negotiate? And when negotiating could make a huge difference in the type of clients you're able to attract, the fees that you earn, and the overall trajectory of your solopreneur career? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. You see, something I did not know, and you may not either, is that little boys and little girls are kind of right on the same level when it comes to their ability to identify what they want and to ask for it. But by the age of 9, boys pull ahead and girls start to fall behind, and most of them never catch up. Now that means an untold amount of opportunity and financial reward that doesn't happen for girls simply because they don't know when to negotiate, how to negotiate, and to actually embrace getting what you want and not just what you need. You see, we have blind spots, we have mindset issues, and we've got all that cultural conditioning that tells us we should be humble, we should be grateful, and we should be more concerned about other people feeling comfortable and happy than our wants. Well, today's guest, leadership coach and consultant Joanne Zook, is going to bring it down for us and let us know why it is more difficult for women to negotiate and how we can get better at it, because it makes such a big difference. Now, I've never asked you to do this before, but I want you to share this episode with one other person. You know the one. That woman in your life, whether she's a colleague, a friend, a sister, a spouse, who is always settling for less than she actually deserves and desires. Get this information into her ear holes and not just yours. Will you do that for me? Because this conversation is an important one, and Joanne and I want it to get to as many women as possible. Are you ready? Here we go. My guest today is Joanne Zook, and she is a Canadian who is a leadership coach. And we have just been having so much fun in the pre-chat talking about all of the ways that we think, well, we're just very like-minded when it comes to women, when it comes to leadership, when it comes to entrepreneurship, and women getting absolutely everything they want and deserve. So let's get started. We were sharing a few minutes ago, Joanne, that both of us kind of cannonballed into entrepreneurship because our careers came to a screeching halt. But most of the women that you and I both work with tend to be the ones who keep going up the ladder, right?
Absolutely.
And yet, what we know about women, about feminine conditioning, about the workplace, is that women don't tend to get what they actually need. And we tend not to get it because we don't know how to ask for it. So that is going to be the big, not exactly a secret anymore, that we are going to uncover today, and why that is so important, even for ladies like us who have left the corporate world. So let's jump right into it. Why do women have so much trouble with negotiating?
It really comes down to childhood conditioning. You know, I remember growing up on a farm, and in one of my early workshops, I had a picture of myself on a farm in a little pink dress with white stockings running around the farm, because that's what little girls did. Little girls wore dresses. Little girls were gracious and grateful. I remember when my parents would have friends over that I would help pour the drinks for my parents' friends. And you know, we are very socialized from a young age to be hyper-focused on the needs of others and less so on our own needs. We're told that we need to be humble, we need to be gracious, we need to be grateful, and really, you know, we're cultivated to be people pleasers ultimately. And so with negotiation in particular, that although the one piece that we understand about female negotiations development is that between the ages of 5 and 9, that's when we see the behavior change. So at the age of 5, little girls and little boys or children raised as girls and boys don't negotiate any differently than one another. But by the age of 9, we already start to see significant behavior changes. Girls ask for less than boys. And when they're interacting with male counterparts, they ask for even less than they would normally ask with boys. So it's something that is not biological, but it's conditioned as a result of how we're raised in society.
And do we see this across, because we're both in the Western hemisphere, I'm in the United States, you're in Canada, and I'm not entirely familiar with your school system here there, but I imagine it's pretty similar to ours. Do you think that this is a global phenomenon? Is it a Western phenomenon? Is it a Judeo-Christian phenomenon? Like, where do we draw the lines? And is this just absolutely universal everywhere?
The short answer is we don't know. So almost all of the negotiation research that's been done has been done through the Harvard School of Negotiation, mm-hmm. which has primarily studied wealthy white men. And so as part of my work over the last few years, I've been interviewing women from a variety of different backgrounds. I have found some really interesting, I call them almost protection factors for women. If they come from cultures where there's a lot of negotiation that happens, bartering that happens, they are more likely to set an expectation higher than somebody that comes from a Western culture as we do. In business, when women are in partnerships with one another, that's another protective factor where they have to be accountable to each other for their negotiation. And so they will tend to be much more assertive in their negotiations. I can't say that that's scientifically, you know, that's statistically significant, but that's a couple of trends that I've started to notice in my one-on-one interviews with female entrepreneurs, that there are some slight differences, but certainly within, you know, within Indigenous culture, again, very suppressed in terms of asking for what we want and feeling like we're allowed to even voice those desires.
You're reminding me of a couple of things, and I'm thinking about some of the places that we have traveled, and, you know, there are parts of the world where when you go into a bazaar, when you go into an open marketplace, and if somebody, if you've read the guidebook, or if you're traveling with someone who's knowledgeable, in certain cultures, you are actually insulting them if you just pay the price that they're asking for. It is expected for you to negotiate. But what's also true, Joanne, is in my own personal travels, they did not receive that well from me when I tried to negotiate. But when my husband did, they just kind of like clicked into their normal roles, and I was just sort of standing there ignored. So I definitely got that lesson, you know, really brought home. But I'm also wondering about something else. I recently finished the book, The Confidence Code, Shipman and Kay, and I'm sure very familiar with it. And they did some tremendous research about women and confidence, which included the fact that women are loath to negotiate. And when they do, they settle for a lot less. But something I've noticed is that women who have been raised as girls in competitive sports, sometimes, and again, this is not scientifically verifiable, but in my own personal experience, women who played competitive sports, particularly swimming, where they were on both the team, but their individual performance was heavily weighted, those girls seemed to have a little bit of an edge when it came to identifying what they needed, asking for what they wanted, and negotiating in order to get it. Have you experienced anything along those lines?
I haven't had the experience of interviewing any folks who have had that sort of that professional sports training, but that doesn't surprise me at all. Just because you're in that position where when you're competing, you need to be able to advocate for your own needs. Otherwise, you're putting the team, and often it's, again, that protective factor of being accountable to someone else. And so that team environment, I imagine, would be very reinforcing for it. But no, I haven't had the opportunity. So I'd love to interview. If there are elite athletes who would like to sit down and have a conversation, I'd be thrilled to have that conversation with you.
Actually, one of my former clients, Nora Wagner, she was a client success story on this podcast, was in training for the Olympics as a weightlifter. So let me see if I can put the two of you in contact, because she might be a wealth of information along those lines. But, you know, we're talking about women, we're talking about our ability to identify what our needs are, our reluctance to ask for what we need, for what we want, for what we expect. That starts at a very early age. But I know that you wouldn't be a leadership coach if you didn't have a way for women to not only learn new skills, but unlearn a lot of that past conditioning. So help me understand, like, how do you even begin that process? Do you think all women who are settling for less than they actually want, whether they're in the workplace or solopreneurs, are even aware of it?
No. And that's the trouble, is they're not even cognizant that they can ask for more. They're not aware that they've entered a situation where negotiation is possible. I work primarily with female solopreneurs. And when I sit down with them for the first time, or I invite them to a workshop, we spend a little bit of time at the beginning just identifying all of the places in their businesses where they're negotiating on a regular basis. And so, you know, if you're a solopreneur, if you're a coach, if you're a consultant, sure, you're putting together proposals for an organization. And as women, we tend to put together the proposal considering that kind of base need level, like, I can deliver this for this amount. And we've already negotiated in our own minds what the lowest price is. We haven't thought about what's the Cadillac version of what I can provide and what's the Cadillac price that would go along with that, and strategically negotiate down from there. So the way that I always start is helping people first to become aware. And, you know, if you look at education taxonomies, Bloom's taxonomy is a great one to look at in terms of just getting aware of all of the opportunities, and then building that knowledge and comprehension and integration over a bit of time. So awareness is a big part of it. But then even understanding the system, like, where do we learn negotiation? We learn it through role modeling, if we're lucky. I teach it at the university through one of my courses, but only if you're in a business program or you happen to take organizational behavior would you ever take a class in negotiation. And it's something that we do every day. And it's a very, you know, even if you strip the emotion and the blind spots out of it, it is a process. And we carry this emotional, these connotations that go with negotiation. I sometimes tell the story of when I was a little girl, I used to watch The Young and the Restless with my grandma. Mm-hmm. And there was a character on that show, Victor Newman, who would, you know, he would drink scotch in the morning in his crystal glasses, and he wore alligator shoes, right? And that's who I imagined when I thought about negotiation, right? I thought about, of course, a white, powerful man in business, not, you know, a woman who is a life coach or who's developed products that they're selling, who's made a granola bar that they're trying to get on the shelves of the local supermarket. And so we don't see ourselves in negotiation. We don't recognize the places. And then we don't know what that process is. So even before you enter the emotional components of gratitude and humility and these blind spots that I've identified from working with clients, there's just so much that we don't know. So my framework is about knowledge. It's about developing confidence and then applying strategies that actually work for women, because the strategies that work for men are not necessarily appropriate for women. They don't bring out our authentic selves, and they make us feel, or not make us feel, but they have us acting in ways that are not true to who we are, and really put our reputation and our relationships at risk.
What would you say, like, the side-by-side, if we're talking about, because there may be women listening thinking, I don't even know, like, what does she even consider negotiation? I mean, even for example, I recall I'm one of those people who started working from the moment I was 15 and a half, like literally the day I was old enough to get a work permit, I went out and got a job, and I've been working ever since. I did not know for many years that the amount of money that you're going to be paid for a job is something that you could talk about. It was, this is, what does this position pay? And the answer was yes or no. It was, to me, a simple yes or no answer. This is the job. This is how much it pays. Do you want it? Yes or no? Like, I had to learn later on that, well, why did you agree to that? Wait, what? What do you mean? Why did I? I mean, the only other answer was no, and then I didn't get the job. It's like, no, but why didn't you say, well, that's not going to be enough for me? Wait, that's a thing? And it reminded me of another guest on the podcast, Melanie Lockhart, who is a writer for hire, and she accidentally found out, I've mentioned this before, she accidentally found out from a man in a writer's group that she is part of, that he is doing the exact, at this time, was doing the exact same kind of work that she was doing, but was literally making 10 times more money. His rate or his retainer was 10 times greater. And she was completely unaware that anybody was getting paid that amount of money for what she did. So once she heard it, she still, as a woman, had to go through that process we're talking about. Oh, now that I know it's possible, we still have to go through some sort of internal process. Yes, but is it possible for me as a woman? And I think that's where it can get kind of messy, because we may know that it's possible, but we may still not know that it's possible for us. And I'm sure you see that as well.
Yeah. Well, and we think that it may not be possible. Well, we think that it may be possible until we get into that situation, and then we get blindsided by these emotional experiences that we have. So, you know, when you're offered that next, right, for her, she's offered a writing gig and asked to quote on it, the fortitude, the internal fortitude that it would take for her to put that 10 times amount on the quote to send it out is where I get a lot of phone calls. Mm-hmm. That's where I get people calling me and saying, do you do one-on-one coaching? Because I need more than just the course. Mm. Because it really, we have to rationalize logically. It's especially in these industries where there isn't a standard rate, right? If you're writing piecework, if you're a consultant, you're a coach, I loved your episode on imposter syndrome. That's why I had reached out to you a couple of weeks ago. But there's a tendency among a lot of women to really downplay our own achievements and our experiences. I was working with a woman 6 months ago who had been top of her field, is one of the best known makeup artists in our city. She's been working in the field for 20 years, and she hadn't raised her rates in ages because she felt like she needed to earn the reputation. Well, You've done the work. And so it really comes down to, how are you going to manage yourself in those situations? And you know, like I alluded to earlier, there's five things that tend to come up for women. And if we can be aware of them, they're mindset issues. If we can be aware of them, we can plan around them and have, you know, safety nets to help us not fall back into, oh, I'm going to offer the lowest possible price to this organization because I feel so grateful that they're giving me the work.
You got to give me the five. We got to get through the five. Because I'm one of those people, as soon as I hear, oh, there's a three-step this or a five, and I'm like, okay, I got my pen out. Let's do it.
Absolutely. Okay. So the five, we start with gratitude. So women will, I will often see women who have been working with clients for years, never having raised their prices, because they're so grateful that that client gave them an opportunity when they were just starting out.
Oh, yes.
So they're operating, they might be charging other clients significantly more, but they're still operating at this ridiculously low level. So gratitude in workplaces, when I do interview coaching, absolutely the same thing. I'm so grateful to be given the opportunity. Often we're leaving positions that we're not happy in, and I'm just grateful for the job. I don't want to risk it. So gratitude's the first one. That humility, the what will they think of me if I ask for more, right? I should be humble. I should wait for them to recognize me. I often hear women who are doing job interviews, that kind of situation. I won't negotiate for the beginning. I'll wait until they see how great I am. Well, like that's never going to fucking happen.
No,
they're not going to give you a raise after 6 months.
No, because once they realize they can exploit you, why would they want to give that up? Like, no. And I used to have that exact same thought that I need to, even though they've just hired me and they could have hired someone else and they chose me, as though that didn't give me enough reason to believe that I was the best person they could have chosen. But now I have to prove myself. And once I have proven myself, then I'm going to up the ante. Ladies who are married, like, no, you don't see, just do everything for them until you get married and then think you're going to change the game. Like, no, that's not how it works. So yeah, being overly humble. Okay, what's number three?
Number three is generosity. So I want to make sure I provide amazing value for my service. I want to be generous. I want to be seen as the person who is most generous in this situation. So if for instance, you're negotiating on a number of different items, maybe you're working on a big project, I do some consulting on the side, and we're negotiating on timelines and deliverables and the purchase of, you know, some intellectual property and all sorts of things. If the other party is really open to it and they're saying yes, 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 often women will feel like they need to be even more generous. So you work with a lot of women in coaching. Now, how many women give away their time and they say, buy this package and I'll throw in another 3 or 4 sessions? My goodness, yes. Like the value of that time is something that we actually need to do the math on as part of a logical approach to negotiation.
Yes.
So generosity is a big one.
Absolutely.
I often find women in job negotiations saying, well, you know, it's a hard economy. And so I want to help the company survive.
Well, what are we calling that one?
Yeah, martyrdom, right? That would still be generosity, okay. But you know, the sense that I want to be contributing to the well-being of the other organization. If you're a solopreneur, you're in business to make money for yourself.
Yeah.
And we struggle with that, right? Faith. This is one that comes up often later in a negotiation. So this inherent belief that, you know, people are as good as we are, and that they're entering into this conversation in good faith, and that when we have a conversation and we agree to do things, well, you're going to do those things, right, Diane? Like you're not going to fail me. And so women will often fail to follow up. They'll fail to get things in writing.
Yeah.
They'll fail to hold the other party to account for the contracts that they have signed. And the faith is also an interesting one for new immigrants and again, this is not statistically significant data, but from some of the interviews I've done, I've seen that women who have come from countries where there isn't a lot of trust in democratic institutions, where there's a lot of shady behavior in business, in governments, etc., and they come to a country like the United States or Canada with strong democratic values, this blind spot is a big one for them because they believe that, you know, the country is personified in the people that they're dealing with. And then the final one is just, you know, it's the general people pleasing, not for any of those other reasons, but just because there is this compulsion that we experience to put others first and always worry about meeting their needs before we even think about our own. So, you know, the one I always struggle with is when I do consulting and we do a strat planning session. I hate organizing things. I absolutely, like my husband and I, well, he's not actually my husband. We've been together 15 years, but neither of us could organize a wedding. So we're just never going to get actually married. Yet I find myself compelled to offer, you know, when we do a strategic planning session, to offer to organize the food and the environment and the games that they play. And to me, that is worse than hell, is organizing events like that. And yet that people pleaser in me feels compelled to do so. So I have to mitigate that by being aware, pre-planning around what, you know, what do I think is going to come up? We're all subject and susceptible to all of these at different times and in different relationships.
Absolutely.
And so really doing some work ahead of time to understand, okay, this is somebody I've worked with before. Do I feel like I owe them a debt of gratitude? Like what am I bringing to this conversation and how do I need to take up space in that conversation so that I'm not giving away what I deserve, what I desire and you know, not, well, fighting is a strong word, but not declaring what it is that is fair and appropriate for me.
You are reminding me of something I don't think I've said on this podcast recently, but I know I have referenced maybe an interview somewhere. I think the thing that most successful women feel terrorized by is the thought that someone will see them as, here it comes, selfish. The other S word, like literally, like it's one thing to be, we talked about driven, ambitious, hardworking, maybe even someone once referred to me as being strictly business. And I'm like, well, we are in the business setting. But they, what they meant was, it was an earlier version of resting bitch face, I think. You know, like they thought I should smile more and you know, be more catering to male approval and so forth. I was just acting like one of the guys and clearly they didn't like that. But this notion that if you do not ascribe to the beliefs and behaviors that women have been culturally conditioned to, and by the way, can we just acknowledge they come naturally to us? I think this is what's challenging. Women don't want to be thought of as selfish because most of us by nature are not. Now, you add the cultural conditioning in there, and it's almost guaranteed we are not going to do something we think might be perceived as selfish. But one of the things that I talk about as a former psychotherapist who studied a lot of neuroscience is there are more connections between the two sides of the brain in a female brain, logical and emotional. So it is actually easier to socialize us to those people-pleasing kind of norms. I mean, it would be an interesting experiment. Maybe somebody will do it at some point to raise boys and girls with the exact same set of expectations. I predict that the girls will still be probably more likely to be collaborative than competitive. You just said it. Neither you or your husband are organized, but somehow you feel, and it's interesting you use the word compelled, you're kind of compelled to do the thing that would make it easier for him, be more pleasing. And frankly, those things make us feel good even when we're undermining ourselves. Hey, it's Diane with a quick interruption to the episode because I've got a couple questions I just need to ask you. One, are you where you want to be in your business? Are you making the money you want to make, working the hours you want to work, seeing the clients that you want to see, and getting the income and impact that you went into business to get? And if the answer is no, what's holding you back? Why is there a gap between where you are and where you want to be? Do you know the answer? In my experience working with female solopreneurs, so many of them don't even really know what's standing in their way. And that is so frustrating. So I created a little quiz called What's Holding You Back? There's a link to it in the show notes. If this is you, please take the quiz. And if you do, DM me on Instagram at Coach Diane Wingert and let me know your results. Now, on the other hand, if you already know what's holding you back, if you already know what the obstacles are that are getting in your way from achieving the income and impact that you deserve and desire, then I don't want you to take the quiz. Forget about the quiz. Go directly to the other link in the show notes and book a consult with me. I may be the very coach, and this may be the year that you put all of that behind you and really have the business that you went into business to have. For everybody else, keep on listening. And if you find value in what you hear, don't forget to leave me a rating and review on Apple or wherever you're listening. Here we go, back to the show.
So I remember when we talked about what you introduced as habit stacking, so pairing your habits. And when you did initially bring that up, my initial reaction was like, ugh, like that sounds awful. Like, I don't want to do that. But that was like one of the first things that one of the first shifts that our work together had changed. And that is something that I'm grateful for every day. So the first thing I do in the morning is I go pee. And so what your advice was, take your medication, you know, right after, have your glass of water there in the bathroom. And so that's sort of my daily routine is going to the bathroom, taking my medication, contacts, coffee. Yeah. And it's great because it just cuts out any chance of forgetting, which then would lead to kind of lollygagging around and then like, oh, wait, have I taken it? I should take it. Wait, but this one other thing. And so just that really starts off the day so consistently and well. So that is the first thing. And then with regard to the rest of my morning routine, my best friend and I, we live together and we exercise in the morning now. So we've been doing that for the past 4 months, like at least 4 days a week. And so we do Beachbody and it's just really fun because we do have the accountability of there's going to be someone waiting for you. So your butt better be up.
So
that's what's so hard about so all
true.
That. Like we are, yes. I don't want to be a woman who says, women, we need to toughen up here. We need to get out there and fight for our rights. We need to know our worth because most women are going to be like, I just want to get paid more, but I really don't want to have to turn into a big old bitch. Is there a way that we could? Yes.
Totally. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
So talking about empathy, we're talking about how difficult it is for us to turn that part off in our brains. And I actually, you know, the good news is that with negotiation, you don't have to turn off the empathy. I had done a review because I teach this negotiation work. I had reviewed all of the materials that Harvard Business School has for purchase for instructors to use. And about, I think it was 89% of them were about teaching empathy to students because empathy is one of the foundational skills in a negotiation. Mm. Most of the negotiation we do is not the Victor Newman, Young and the Restless style negotiation, right? Those are mergers and acquisitions, divorces, real estate deals. We're not doing that in our businesses. We're negotiating with clients, with, you know, with other consultants that maybe we're partnering on and we need to define the terms of, you know, you're doing this and I'm doing that. So the type of negotiation that we're expecting is not necessarily the type that we're going to get. And we come in worried that we're going to have to be, you know, entering kind of a winner take all type of situation.
Yes.
And that's not the case, right? In most situations, when you are approached by somebody to do work with them or vice versa, it's because you want to work together. You want to work together toward a mutually beneficial outcome. And so coming to that from different positions, empathy is absolutely critical. And so I find it super ironic that everything that you can download from Harvard is about teaching empathy. We don't need to learn how to use empathy. It's a great reminder of applying those skills in a skillful way of listening and validating and often optimizing the outcome that the other party is looking for. So when I do work around consulting with large organizations, we have a big sky conversation first because I want to know what they're trying to achieve. Mm. And because I've gotten better at negotiation over the years, I'm going to be pitching to them, again, that Cadillac version of, well, here's what we could do together. And you tell me what we need to walk back because it's about meeting their needs and at the same time meeting my own. So empathy is really, really critical to that skill set, as are values. Understanding your own internal compass and what matters to you is, again, something that women tend to be more in touch with than men. And being able to understand, and so some of the work that I always do with women is run them through exercises of taking the time to identify your values and what drives you. We had this conversation beforehand, mm-hmm. what drives mm-hmm. you. And what do you want your life to look like? Because if you go into a negotiation and you understand what's important to you, you have the opportunity to negotiate toward those outcomes. Where if you don't, if you're vague about it, if you're just focused on paying the bills, which quite frankly is important to a lot of people, you can tend to say yes to everything. A little bit of shiny object syndrome or just the ability to not set boundaries effectively. But those values can really help you to say, not just say yes or no, but interpret when you get that gut response. When you get that gut response to something, when somebody, a few months ago, I had somebody approach me about some work and she wanted to hire me for 6 months to do a project. I had just left my corporate job and I had a severance in place. So my husband and I had an agreement that the first 6 months I would focus on scaling my business and mm-hmm. see if I could make it as a solopreneur. Mm-hmm. And so the moment that she said that, I had this immediate physical response. Absolutely not. And because I had done the work and I understood what was important to me in that moment, I could say, you know what, that's not something that I can entertain, because it means that at the end of 6 months, I wouldn't have a business to come back to. I don't want to work full time for you, even though it sounds like a lovely project, but here's what I can do, or here's how I can support you. And so it gives us more of that ability to roll with the uncertainty in a negotiation. Mm. And by combining that with our empathy at strength, we can really create incredible outcomes. But we have to understand what the blind spots are coming in and not allow those to sabotage us.
I think the blind spots are, I mean, just even calling them blind spots is really crucial, because something you've helped me understand more even as we've gotten to know each other is that traditionally we think about negotiation in the government sector. We think about, and I know you come from public service, I came from nonprofit, where there's an ethos about, we don't talk about money. We're here for the good of the collective. We're here for others. There's this binary distinction in so many conversations in corporate, nonprofit, and public service that it's like, well, you either want to make money or you care about people. And I remember, you know, going through the social work program at UCLA, it wasn't quite spelled out that clearly, but I remember hearing in many different variations of that, I'm sure you've heard it in public service, that mm-hmm. basically you're either a person who cares about people or you care about yourself. You either care about money or you care about making an impact or making a difference. And there's this artificial distinction where you can't do both. So if that's sort of the big picture, if you will, that's kind of like the global norm. Every time we may think, I haven't had a raise in 3 years, or I haven't raised my fees in 5 years or whatever, then you're like, oh, no, I remember now. I'm a good person. I care about people. I'm not a money grubber. And then, of course, our mind starts to remind us of people that we think of as greedy, that we think of as selfish, that we think of as only caring about the money, and then how much we don't respect them and we don't like them and we don't want to be like them. And then we just kind of tuck back under and allow ourselves to continue to be exploited. So one of the things I try to uncover as a blind spot is that all of that is learned. All of that is learned, and that distinction between making an income and making an impact, you didn't create that. That doesn't actually exist. And that kind of makes your head explode a little bit, because you're like, wait a minute, if that's not true, what else isn't true? Now, a few minutes ago, I think I swung you in the direction of talking about the five mindset issues, but I don't think I gave you an opportunity to share the difference between how men negotiate and how women tend to negotiate, and why it doesn't work for women to negotiate like men.
Right. Well, so much of it is mindset related. Women do approach a negotiation thinking only about the minimum level that they need.
Okay.
So what do I need? Mm-hmm. Not what do I want? Mm-hmm. And men have been, again, socialized to ask for what they want, knowing that they may not get it, knowing that they may need to negotiate down. And so want is such an uncomfortable word for us. I actually deliberately use the words deserve and desire in my tagline, get what you deserve and desire, because I know it makes people a little bit uncomfortable. But it is a bit of a push against that dichotomy of you're not selfish or selfless. There is a continuum there, and self-respect is somewhere in the middle. And it's a big part of that continuum. And so when I work with clients, what I like to have them think about is a different set of terms, which is when you go into a negotiation, you need to know, of course, what you need. But let's call that a dignified level. Mm. Like, this is the minimum I would need to feel like my dignity is intact. Okay. And then we also need to understand what would feel generous. What would feel like how this person feels like I am worthwhile. Again, I might not get that. That might not be something that they're willing to pay, or the terms are out of the scope of reasonability for them. But if I understand those two numbers and I walk into a conversation and I say, okay, blue sky, here's what I'd love this to look like. And I drop my generous number along with my proposal. I am going to land much more closely to that proposal than I will to my dignified. But I need to know my dignified, because that's the point at which I need to walk away. So in traditional negotiation
terminology, that's your bottom line.
Yeah, we would call it the BATNA, the best alternative to a negotiated agreement, technical term that means nothing emotionally. But understanding what the dignified level is and where I need to walk away, if I'm not going to feel I'm appreciated and I'm valued, because we have to introduce that concept back into our business dealings. I don't want to work with an organization that doesn't value me, that doesn't appreciate my time. And so I need to go into a conversation with those two numbers in mind. And of course, always starting with the generous level, because you never get to negotiate up. You only ever negotiate down. And so if you're starting with your dignified level, you're going into undignified territory very, very quickly, especially in situations where the other party is expecting to negotiate with you. So, I mean, men just tend to come at it with, this is what I'd love. And they tend to have a higher ability to own the risk associated with that. Where as women, there's the nurturing responsibility. I mean, you know, that many entrepreneurs, female entrepreneurs, don't find their way into the sector until they're in their late 30s and 40s. Mm-hmm. And that's because we're taking care of our children and we are making sure that we have a little nest egg put aside before we can take that risk. And men are simply cultured to take risks early and often. And again, you know, as much as we are socialized in certain ways, so are men.
No, it's absolutely true. In fact, when I think back in my own history, Joanne, it is very, very clear that I had strong entrepreneurial tendencies, even in grade school. Like, I was that Girl Scout who sold more cookies than the rest of the troop combined. Right? I was that kid in after-school daycare that was teaching other kids how to start their own business and getting shut down for it. But I didn't have any mentorship. I didn't have anybody who said, you seem like somebody who would do really well to have her own business. So, and then eventually later on, I was divorced with three kids, and there was no way that I would have perceived. And I think this is something that I think is really important too. I perceived as a head of household with three dependents that I would be more secure in a job than I would be banking on myself. I no longer believe that's true, but it is a very popular notion that has been propagated from one generation to the next. But we all see, I mean, you've been let go, I've been let go, I've been harassed and forced to leave. So job security, it's a nice idea, but I wished I had learned much earlier in life that my ultimate security is thinking as though I'm my own boss, no matter who signs my check.
Absolutely. Me too.
And that didn't happen anywhere near as early as I would have liked. One of the things I liked most about this conversation that I didn't quite expect was your focus on the negotiation starts with you. That negotiating with yourself, negotiating with your beliefs, with your behaviors, with your assumptions, with your biases, with your blind spots, and really doing the work with someone like you to understand, like, you're literally going unarmed into, it could be a confrontation. Confrontation doesn't have to be a bad thing, but that's another thing, is we tend to be conflict avoidant. And we think, oh, if there's any kind of conflict, I'm just going to put down my weapons. Girl, you didn't bring any to the table because you're not even aware. You're not even aware of what could happen. The words that you use as well, that thinking about the, instead of thinking about the minimum level and instead of thinking about what I need, thinking about what I want, identified a dignified level so that you're not beginning a relationship with resentment and feeling a lack of respect, but a generous level, and even saying, here's what I'd like, with a big smile on your face, so that she thinks big. This is the kind of person we want to work with, or we want to hire, or we want to have speak to our team, because you're a big thinker. You're not saying, and if I don't get it, it's like, you want to know what would make me really happy? I love that. I can't even imagine what a difference that would make in the lives of so many women I've known.
Yeah. I mean, I think about some of the clients that I've had and just walking through, a conversation leads to moving from a contract that would have been $20,000 to a contract that's $100,000, just because they took the time to think about what's the thing that I could do and how might I present this in a way that, and we do this really well. We really do intuit through our empathy what that other party needs. And really the sky is the limit. And I don't know what it is it's like in the US right now, but certainly in Canada, we've had the labor market shortages across yes. all organizations. So consultants are in demand because they just smart people have left organizations.
Yes.
And so they're actually looking for leadership from without. And when you can come in and say, not just here's what you proposed or what you put the RFP out for, but here's what I can do for you. And let's talk about, how that would meet your needs. There are tremendous opportunities and women really do that well because we're able to articulate and pull out the emotional connection that people have to the frustrations in their business that they're experiencing. So
yeah,
I think we're actually very well suited for it. We're just not cultured to do it.
But see, that's why I think what you're doing now really allows you to have so much more impact than what you've done in the past, because each woman whose life has changed, she has friends, she has sisters, she has daughters, she has colleagues. When we start collectively, individually and collectively recognizing what's actually possible, like instead of, I better take a small piece of the pie. I want to make sure everybody has some. Ladies, let's make more pie.
Make more pie.
Make yeah. more
And let's talk
pie.
About our recipes. the last thing that I always talk to people about in my courses is go out and, spread the good word, right? Talk to your daughters. Like my daughters would be terrified to come home and say, I applied for a job and didn't negotiate. Talk to your daughters, your nieces, your friends. I try to encourage these conversations. I'm in a women's entrepreneurship community here in Winnipeg, and we have a lot of conversations, and I try to share, this is what I negotiated. This is what I struggled with. I hit a hard ceiling when I asked for this, especially if you're in the same sector. You're not necessarily competing against each other. I have a very specific niche, but if we're all applying to, deliver programming to a center, well, we should all be offering at the same, pretty much the same price with a little bit of variation, right? And what had been happening, of course, is that some people are highly, highly attuned to what they're worth, and some people have been undervaluing themselves and not, afraid to ask for slightly more, never mind 5 or 10 times what they have received in the past.
You would absolutely cringe if I told you when I started my psychotherapy practice, I actually charged less than everyone else in the community because I thought it was the only way to get new clients because there were already 500 fee-for-service private practices in that zip code. And then after several years, I wanted to raise my rates. I only raised them $5. And I wrote the longest ass email of justification. I look back on that now. I'm just like, oh God. So I really do empathize with, well-educated, well-prepared, knowledgeable, seasoned women who genuinely struggle with this. And as long as we think it's us being a dodo or a coward, or whatever, nothing changes. It's these conversations and spreading the word to as many women as possible. The system is rigged and we need to help each other out. So I really am so excited to know you, to get to know you better, and to get as many people as possible to connect with you. So I will be linking in the show notes to your website, to your course, and all the ways that people connect with you on social media as well.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for this conversation. It's been such a treat.
I really enjoyed it.
You've been listening to the Driven Woman Podcast with Diane Wingert. Want more straight talk and strategy each week that will take you from spinning to winning? Don't forget to hit subscribe in your podcast player so you won't miss a single episode. Then head on over to the Driven Woman free and private Facebook group community. See you there.